Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results. Now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help your job get the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/podcast13. Just go to Indeed.com/podcast13 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/podcast13. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, everybody, it's Mark. I'm back with another great episode of Finding Your Summit, all about people overcoming adversity and finding their way. And as we speak today on March 17th, St. Patrick's Day, this episode is being run on April 30th. So we are going to go into the future. Maybe it's back to the future. But nonetheless, I'm right now currently standing somewhere on Mount Everest. And as I broadcast, though, today, again, we're going to go back and forth a little bit. I've got 13 days, 23 hours, 27 minutes and 13 seconds before I get on that plane. I'm very jacked up about that. And as always, please go and check out my website, www.markpattisonnfl.com. And you can hit a button called Follow the Journey. And you can actually see me going up and down the mountain, which is really cool, which is a Garmin app that I've integrated with the site. And also continuing to raise money for Amelia's Everest, the Lhotse Challenge. Well over 50 grand now. Original goal is over 27,000. And very grateful for all those who have really opened their heart and their pockets and donated to that great cause for, again, higher ground here in Sun Valley, Los Angeles, and New York. And of course, always go in and find more episodes on my website or iTunes of the podcast. They're all there. I would greatly appreciate a ratings and review on iTunes. It helps with the show popularity, and we continue to steamroll well over 100,000 episodes, which I'm very grateful for. And today is kind of an anniversary as we speak, because this is my 200th episode. Can you believe it? 200 episodes of doing this, and every single time filled with joy and happiness and gratefulness because of these various people's stories that are so inspiring and incredible, and they're willing to share their story with me, like today's guest, Mackenzie Johnson. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thank you. I mean, gosh, we're going to get into your story, and it's, you know, to me, I'm trying to piece all this together, and I'm going to hack up. We were starting right before we went live. You're currently, and we're going to kind of backfill a little bit of this stuff, but you're the executive director of what?
It's a nonprofit called Soulumination, and we take photos of terminally ill children free of charge for the families.
Yeah, that's just incredible. And it's a word that your founder made up. And so that's why I didn't want to hack it up. And just, you know, again, what a great cause. So, you know, some of this is around some of the stuff, work I'm doing, the philanthropy world and what that means. But there is a common friend that we have, Christy Myers Peterson. And by the way, quick shout out to the Pacific Northwest Women's Alpine Hiking and Social Club that's floating around up in the Pacific Northwest, my home state of Washington, the city of Seattle, and for introducing us to have this conversation. And trust me when I say that anybody who hasn't been through struggles is either lying or it's about to come, because we all have our ups, we all have our downs, and certainly I've got a whole bucket full that would take many more podcasts to get through. But I think also that's where the real strength comes out of, and opportunities to do better and learn from your mistakes and also help other people, because ultimately, you know, we all have to face that challenge. And the question is, what do you do about it? And how do you move forward in a very graceful way? So I want to go back and I want to talk a little bit about your background and kind of ultimately this long and winding road that you had to go through, which led to, I think, this fantastic opportunity where you're really making a difference in kids' lives. And that's so wonderful. So let's go there. So I was watching a video, which you bravely got in front of a bunch of people somewhere up in the great state of Washington, probably outside of Seattle somewhere. And you told your story, and, you know, it involves alcohol, and it involves you going through some really tough times. And fortunately, you know, you've got this amazing sister that, you know, I think you've relied heavy on in terms of her support and her love and her expectations that have kept you going over these years. I'm sure there's other things too, but let's dig in and tell me about your past and kind of what led you into all this.
Well, you know, someone said it was St. Patty's Day this morning, and I didn't even remember that it was. And I said, you know, I'm a really bad alcoholic because I didn't even remember that it was St. Patty's Day. And I'm an alcoholic. I'm in recovery. I've been in recovery for almost 9 years now. But the path of that took me down. I was a daily blackout drinker for about a third of my life. And then before that, for about 4 years, I had a pretty intense eating disorder, which then changed into, like, kind of morphed into pure alcoholism when I got to college. So that is, you know, that's the road that I've been down. And now I've been sober almost as long as I drank, which will be a huge milestone in the next year and a half.
Yeah, no, that's incredible. So I'm asking these questions because I just don't know the answers. Okay. Right. And when you are going down these different paths, right, of self-destruction, is there any point along the road where, like, when you're blacking out night after night after night, that you're saying to yourself, something's wrong, or I need help? Or is your brain just goes to a different place where you just kind of know, you wake up and that's just part of your life? Like, somebody would go and run up a mountain, or now I know you're very active in hiking with Christy and others. How does the brain work in terms of trying to process that?
So I definitely knew I drank differently from the beginning because I could see how other people drank and it wasn't the same as how I drank. When I take a drink, I can't stop. I don't stop until I'm blacked out. And so I think there were cues there early on. Definitely for the last 2 or 3 years of my drinking, I would wake up every day and be like, I'm not doing that again. Why am I doing this to myself? How can I stop? And I tried to find ways, tried to restrict my drinking or only drinking one type of alcohol or only drinking on the weekends, or, you know, I'm not going to drink hard alcohol. I'm only going to drink beer and all this stuff, and really trying to figure that out for myself. And when you're an alcoholic, that doesn't work at all either. Your brain is, it's like a switch. So you're either on or you're off.
And now that you, well, let me go back and ask a different question. So, so you're going through this period of time, and you're this switch, it's not really going on. It's not going off, as you just said. Did you have friends around you, maybe your sister, other people that, you know, they call it intervention. I've never been in one, but, you know, I don't, what I'm saying is, even as a participant, to help somebody else, right?
So yeah.
Did you have people around you, like, saying, you know, we need to help McKenzie out?
A little bit. So what alcoholics do is they surround themselves with like-minded people. So people don't do that to them. So we want to be surrounded by people who are doing the same behaviors, so we don't have to stop what we're doing and being held accountable. My mom, and so I'm from Seattle. I moved to California when I was 17 and stayed away on purpose. So my family, like, couldn't really see what I was doing. I created a whole kind of separate life for myself. I lived in Australia, came back to California, and that was all by design. My mom would write me letters, like handwritten letters, and mail them to me. And I threw them all away, but I do remember them. And they said, you know, if you ever need help, her father was an alcoholic. If you ever need help, we're here. And I would just literally throw them in the garbage because I didn't want to see that. So I knew there was help available, but I didn't surround myself with people that, yeah.
Healthy influences.
Right.
Yeah.
I definitely had some for sure. But, like, unfortunately, that's also part of it. You're kind of surrounding yourself with people who are doing the same thing.
And why do you think that, for whatever reason, you're brain was wired in a certain way that drew you to alcohol in the first place?
Well, I mean, it does run on both sides of my family, but not like my sister is not an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I definitely think I was predispositioned to drink, but I know that this is really tough because doctors and everyone will tell you something different, but like, I do have that nagging feeling inside that, like, I didn't have to, because there is a choice involved, but I know that once I started drinking, it was really difficult to stop that. Mm. So I've heard both sides of the coin here. It's like, you know, it's genetic, but also I think the fact that you're doing it to yourself, it makes it a little more complicated than another disease. Right.
And okay. So you're going down this path for a long time and a lot of self-destruction. And so you said you've been sober for, I think, 9 years, right? And you drank for a long time. So you said, you know, what you remember, you know, another 9 years or whatever. But so as you emerged out of this, what was the breaking point of I've got to go down a new path or this is not going to end well?
Towards the end, I was in and out of the hospital a lot. And I like really certain basic functions in my life were really breaking down, right? Like I was having a hard time maintaining my job or the roles in my job. My relationships were stressed. Like things really started breaking down. And I think that's really common because the term rock bottom, you really do have to hit that. You have to like lose a lot. And I'll have parents or other families contacting me and say, you know, my son or my sister or this, and it's kind of, if they're not to the point where they've lost enough or they're really ready to make that change, unfortunately, it's pretty rare that a change will happen. You really have to kind of go down you have to lose a lot to make this change, at least in my experience.
So what did you lose?
A lot of dignity. I think I lost a lot of trust in me that I didn't realize that I had lost, because in my mind, I'm down in California and away from my family, but there was a lot of damage that I had done that I didn't even know until later on. And I think relationships, like damaging friendships, making bad decisions around that. I have a DUI on my record years ago, and I lost the life that I thought I was building for myself, if that makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. I never thought I would be back in Seattle. This is not the path that I necessarily saw myself on. It's the path I'm glad I am on and should be on. But I lost a lot of relationships. Probably one person that, the only person in my life I ever thought I might get married to. Yeah, all of that.
So you said that you ended up in where you are currently as I'm talking to you here on our Zoom podcast, you ended up back in Seattle. So mm-hmm. What led you back to Seattle?
So I was in California, hit my rock bottom, finally accepted the help that my family had offered. And I went to treatment in Canada, of all places, on Vancouver Island mm-hmm. in Nanaimo. And I went to treatment there. I went to 8 weeks of inpatient. And then I did 2.5 months of their extended care where I lived still in their community. And then they graduated and I stayed in that community. I got a place with another girl from treatment and stayed there an extra few months. And while I was in treatment, my family had packed up my place in California and moved everything up to Seattle. So I really felt like I wasn't given a choice. And I'm not saying you should give an alcoholic in that early recovery a lot of choices, but I really felt like I wanted to make some decisions for my life and I didn't want to just quickly move back to Seattle. That had never really been a plan of mine. My mom was really sick with cancer at the time. It's just a lot to process and a lot to kind of like face. Also, I had to face a lot of things. So I was kind of pacing myself with that, I think. And finally, after, you know, 8 or 9 months, I took a job down in Seattle and finally moved back basically moved back home and was able to start the healing process and face a lot of the things I wasn't willing to face, but I needed some time to do that.
And how many years ago was that?
That was coming up on 9 years ago. Well, moving back was around 8 years ago.
Okay. So you've been up there now for a while. You've adjusted. Okay. I got it. So now you come back and your mom has cancer and you are trying to repair damaged relationships. And I'm sure part of your treatment too is just like facing the demons and all the things that come out. How much did guilt play into any of this, or shame? Maybe that's a different word.
Yeah. Guilt and shame are huge for anyone in recovery. I think I don't love the word shame because I think it implies like a lot of self-loathing, and I honestly don't have a lot of self-loathing. I mean, maybe I'm too self-centered for that, but definitely a lot of guilt. I held a lot of secrets. I ruined a lot of, you know, relationships that I cared about. And if I still think back, like I was talking to a couple friends in recovery the other day and we were talking about our biggest regret and we all said them, and I like felt sick to my stomach still, like that this much later. And really that would have been like 15 years ago or something. But so that I definitely don't dwell on that in my daily life. But if I really take some time to think about what I did and who I was, it makes me want to throw up.
How do you, and maybe this is through the support group, and I've got another quick little story that I want to share with you after you tell me this, but so you go through this horrific period in your life and it's not the life you were meant to lead, and you know that, and then you ultimately take steps, right, to correct it, which you did successfully, and you've been on the you know, the right path, you know, sounds like for the last 9 years. So at the end of the day though, there's the Christmas party and there's the work party and there's this friends gathering and come over for dinner and here comes the wine and all that kind of stuff. And so how do you stay strong to just like, you know what, I just, my choice is not to do that. And, you know, I'll take water or orange juice or something else, and versus, you know, going down the alcohol path. How do you maintain that strength?
That's a great question. So honestly, for many years, I didn't go to those functions. Okay, so with alcohol is so acceptable, right? So if someone had a cocaine addiction and they're in recovery from cocaine, they wouldn't be expected to go to parties where there's cocaine everywhere. So I didn't think that I should be expected to go to parties where there's alcohol everywhere, because to me, that's exactly the same thing. So I avoided them for a long time. Two, I'm really vocal about just saying that I don't drink. I let people know that I'm going to be around, whether it's a work, social, they're going to know that I'm in sobriety, because then that protects myself. And I'll be much less likely to pick up a drink around somebody who knows my situation. So I do that as a protective mechanism. I also like have no shame in telling people that. I mean, going to meetings, surrounding yourself with like-minded people. The more I share about being in recovery is the more I realize how many people are also in recovery. At functions, I still love to like drink out of a wine glass or something like that. I actually don't like it when I'm at a function and they give me like a water glass with water in it. I actually ask for like a wine glass with water in it or something like that. It makes me feel a little more comfortable. And it feels special because it's still like, I want to be able to celebrate occasions. So I just ask for whatever glassware they're using too.
So my little story I was going to tell you. So I spent probably half my life in Seattle, and just outside of Seattle is a little town called Issaquah, home of the Costco headquarters. And I've probably been to the top of Tiger Mountain at least 150 times, right? So it's one of those, for all those people that don't know what Tiger Mountain is, it's a mountain that's maybe, I don't know, 20 miles outside of Seattle. You go across the bridge and you can access a good little poke, you know, that goes essentially straight up depending on your route. And, you know, hour and a half later, 2 hours later, you've kind of, you know, got this amazing workout, and you go there always very early in the morning. So as you get almost to the top, What you find is there is a kind of a carved out little woodsy campsite. It's not, people don't camp there, but there's logs that you can go sit on. And a few times that I was up there on Saturdays, like the third Saturday of every month or something, they'd have this group from AA go up there, and then somebody leading it would, you know, they go around the circle and they talk about, you know, whatever they talk about, you know, in AA meetings. And everybody had their coin, right? So do you still carry that coin? And I guess the coin is a reminder, or maybe you have some other token of a reminder. And B, have you been up Tiger? And C, have you sat around the campsite where they actually do this really cool thing?
Okay, so I have all my coins in my purse all the time. I actually gave my first coin to my girlfriend who got sober, and I gave it to her for 1 year of sobriety. So I guess I'm missing one coin, but it's in a good new home. I carry them around with me. I actually have my grandfather's coin from his treatment center I keep in my purse also.
Is the idea that you said you have coins, so for every year of sobriety on your anniversary date, you get a coin. Is that the idea?
You get a coin at a meeting, yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
And it has the serenity prayer and the year, your year number on it also. So those stay with me. And then what was the second question?
The question was, have you been up Tiger Mountain?
I use cable line to train up Tiger Mountain. I'll do laps on cable.
Yeah,
and of course I've been up the other routes as well. And I have not been to that meeting, but I definitely know about it. And I know the group that, that runs that meeting. I don't know that it's been going in the last year, but
yeah, with COVID. So when you get into a support, which is kind of a follow-up question, it doesn't really matter if you're at that meeting or a different meeting or whatever. Tell me what that support does in terms of maintaining your commitment to sobriety. And really this could be for drugs or all the other addictions that exist that are out there. But for you, what does that do in terms of this support, that community, people you can call on?
So it keeps you accountable. It keeps me accountable. It gives me friends and relationships that are in the same similar positions. I found that like you have to find something else because you now have all of this time free that you would have normally been drinking. So you have to find something else. And whether that's meetings, I use the outdoors for that. It gives you a support system, and I think it teaches you in a way. I mean, I guess meetings aren't necessarily fun, but something really important in recovery is learning how to have fun without alcohol or substances, because that is a foreign, very foreign concept for us. So it gives you, it kind of like lays the groundwork, I think. Mm-hmm. And we, you know, and we're fun. We like to laugh. Like we'll probably laugh at the most inappropriate things that we've done, but like, if you can't have some sort of joy out of what we've been through and where we're at now, I don't like, there's just no point, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, look, yeah, it's really redirecting your energy, you know, from one thing to another. And then that becomes your addiction. My addiction is mountain climbing and outdoors and getting after it in that way. And I've been kind of a gym rat for a long time, and that hasn't changed. I've probably intensified what I'm doing, because as this podcast is releasing, I'm standing on Everest. Okay, so we're into the future now again, but I want to tie back something that Christy Myers Peterson was over here in Sun Valley. We had a great night. There was a bunch of people up at this big hotel here called the Limelight. Really, just great energy that particular night. And when she had written to me about you and how inspiring you were to stand up and kind of deliver. And again, everybody's got something. So don't feel like, you know, you're isolated and you got the biggest thing in the room. It's all relative to that particular person. But I thought this was such a cool idea. And we've talked about this. I'm cooking up some ideas around something sort of similar to this, but you know, the Pacific Northwest Alpine Women's Hiking and Social Club. And, you know, to me, they're such great opportunity for that camaraderie. And then trickling back down to, kind of all those other things you were talking about, laughing and joking. And it doesn't have to be, it's not about drinking or obsessing about other things that maybe other people have obsessed about in the past, but really having a goal, going after it, meeting with a group of really positive, like-minded individuals, in this case, women, because I'm not included, and then going out and having a blast in nature. And what I've found, because I found the mountains, this whole Seven Summit thing, I found so much of that, of the stuff that I was going through, and it served as such great healing, right? And that has been the one thing that I, you know, even growing up in Seattle, as I guess sort of in nature, but I didn't really understand it until I started really immersing myself, not only moving to Sun Valley, Idaho, but going around the world and being out on extended expeditions where you're not talking to anybody and, you know, you see a squirrel or a butterfly go by and that's the coolest thing of the day. But really having to simplify your life that much to really get the meaning of life and what that's all about. I'm wondering, you know, whether it's part of Christy's Alpine Women's Hiking Group through Third Plug or just your own, you know, getting out and, like you said, going up and down and doing training runs on this really steep cable line on Tiger Mountain. Have you found that that's been part of your healing too, of kind of directing your energy?
Absolutely. I know that I wouldn't be climbing mountains if I wasn't sober, but I can't tell you that I would be sober if I wasn't climbing mountains. Like, I don't know the answer to that because it has been such a big part. It's been completely intertwined with my sobriety. After I got out of treatment, I was, you know, gym climbing and had found that and then started climbing outside. And then I took a course with Alpine Ascents International here in Washington. And I went up Mount Baker with them and I had never done anything like that. I had never carried a pack. I had never backpacked. I'd never hardly camped. I did not grow up in a hiking family. I was a soccer player growing up, so I was a bit of an athlete, but I had never experienced nature or mountains in that way. And you got me on that glacier. And once the sun came up and I could see what was around me, I was like, this is where I want to be. And this is like, it felt like home in a weird way. And ever since then, that's been where I go. That is my total happy place. And I know that it helps me. I know that it helps me stay sober and it helps me stay happy and sane and all of that stuff.
Yeah. And the other benefit too, is that there's for sure a major component of clarity when those things happen and you see that sunrise coming up over the glacier and you can, you know, just really bask in what that's all about and the glory of nature and the serenity that can bring you, and it just quieting your mind so everything's not racing so much.
Well, I think, and I have a friend who has PTSD and who volunteers with Recovery Beyond with me, and there's something about being on a rope and you are only having, you are just putting one foot in front of the other, especially if you're not leading the team. Like you, that is your focus, and there's something really meditative and like clarifying about it. It's really incredible, and I think it can help people on all sorts of planes.
Yeah. Well, look, it sounds like you're in a wonderful spot, and I want to talk. I want to go back to where we started and this .org that you work for. What has that done to you in terms of maintaining kind of your humility in all this? Because, you know, for me, again, between the higher ground work that I'm involved in, but really the podcast, you know, you're number 200, right? Big milestone for me. So I should get 200 coins. And every single time I do one of these, you know, it gets back to the theme of finding your summit. You've had to find your summit. And it's about people overcoming their adversity and finding their way. And it sounds like you're either finding your way or you found your way. And that's really beautiful, right? And so now you get to immerse yourself with going back and helping others. And you probably see some pretty frightening, you know, situations that you are around. So what has that done for just kind of your whole, I don't know, mission in life and purpose?
So, I mean, as an alcoholic and who I am, I think is inherently selfish. Like, addiction is a very selfish disease. So even when I first got sober, it was hard. It took me a few years to really be able to give back in a way. I was really focused on myself and my recovery. And then slowly these opportunities started happening to give back. And I actually think it might have started when I started really sharing my story openly on some climbing forums in Washington. And the response I was getting was absolutely incredible. So I knew just by sharing some of my story that I was helping other people and I would get messages and all of that. And then my family started fundraising in honor of my mom. We started fundraising for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, and I'm very competitive. So it will come as no surprise that once I got a taste of that, I wanted to raise more and more money to help fund blood cancer research. So we have done that on a big level. And then I started working for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society before I came to Soul Illumination. So it took me a little while to get there, but now that I am in a place where I can give back to people and families who need it, that I have the capacity to raise a large amount of money to help fund future cures, like, it makes me, it that definitely fulfills me in a way that, you know, other things don't. And being able to give back with Soul Illumination, what we do now is we go into like hospitals at probably the hardest time in people's lives. They're about many times, especially during COVID, because we can't do a lot of our normal sessions. Our photographers are going into the hospital when their child is going to die or is going to be taken off life support. Mm-hmm. And we photograph those moments for them in a really beautiful way. And it allows them to have a piece of their child after their child is gone. So to be able to run an organization like this, I never would have thought that I would even have the capacity, like emotional maturity, to be emotionally mature enough to do this work, to put other people in front of myself was never a strong suit. So just to be able to do this kind of stuff is an honor for me.
Wow. Well, I can tell you this, you're way stronger than me, because I would be a chocolate mess if I did what you did. I mean, just sounding that, it'd be a very hard thing to do. And so, but at the same time, it puts you in your place of, you know, values your life and others when you are kind of day-to-day living that world. So, you know, my hat's off to you in terms of what you do on a day-to-day basis. That's great. Thanks. So let's jump back in the climbing world as we kind of round third base here. So you're training, going up and down, you're competitive from your earlier soccer stuff, right? And do you have any big climbs coming up? So what's your big goal?
Oh man, people ask me that. I have so many. Well, so I'm kind of chipping away. What gives me a local list is our top 100 peaks here in Washington. So mm-hmm. I chip away at that. And then, you know, I've done Cotopaxi, I've done Kilimanjaro, I've done a peak in Peru that I can never pronounce. That was technical ice climb. And I love to travel. So my goals are always, it doesn't ever have to be just about climbing. I want it to be about what makes me happy. So I think my goal is always just to keep pushing myself and doing what I love. So I'm looking at Chile for next year, climbing and traveling. I have a huge list of local routes I want to do. But what's given me the most joy now, which again is out of the ordinary for me, is now I can take other people up routes and climbs. And I've taken multiple people on their first summit of Rainier and Baker, and that gives me a ton of joy now. When I used to like never want to repeat routes, I don't want to do this, I always want to be doing, you know, the next newest best thing for myself. But now I'm in a place with my climbing in my life that I can give back to people. And that's what gives me joy. It's not that I'm getting another summit, it's that watching them achieve that goal. taking a friend outdoor rock climbing for the first time this weekend in Red Rocks. Like, and that I'm so excited for that. And that's not, it's not about me anymore.
Love that. I mean, again, having goals, going after them, attaining them, setting new ones, it's all part of the way that we should all operate and live. Gives you a big punch of energy and joy and happiness. And that's what, you know, at the end of the day, that's what we're all striving for. Give me the website of the company that you live at. So if people want to come and find out more and how they can donate, they can do so.
It's www.soulumination. So S-O-U-L-U-M-I, Herrick. Okay, Soul Illumination.
Yeah, we're going to put it. Well, let me say it. We'll put it in the show notes. So they'll be fine. Right. It's a hard word to say, and that's why I didn't say it.
I'm like reading it.
You're doing fine. So, okay, listen, I totally appreciate you coming on, bearing your soul. You're very brave. And look, at nothing but best to you going out into the future. Keep chasing your goals. And I think that's what life is all about. And you know, staying on the healthy path, then, you know, my hat's off to you. And again, thank you for coming on and sharing that.
Thanks, Mark. I can't wait to follow you along on this next adventure for you.
Thank you very much. Well, as we're going, we're talking before I go,
and
this comes out, we're going to be, I actually be in the thick of things. So there she is, the one, the only Mackenzie Johnson. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey, and thank you so much for listening to the Find Your Summit podcast. We are so glad to have you along for this journey. And if you enjoy the show, please tell a friend, share it on iTunes, spread it to the planet. We're looking to broadcast this to every person that is out there because, as you know, everybody has their own summit that they're going after. Okay, if you're looking to follow my journey, you can find that through my social links on markpattisonnfl.com. That's Mark, M-A-R-K, Pattison, P-A-T-T-I-S-O-N, NFL.com. So, until the next podcast, just remember, clear eyes, full hearts, and remember, it takes a little more to make a champion, so make it happen. Thank you. Bye.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.